I think she was sure of the really goodwill and intentions of people, that something had made them forget it or be what they were too. I mean, she wouldn't misjudge a politician as you or I would, I don't think. She wouldn't blame him for, I don't think. She'd realize what brought him to that state of mind. But I think she was always vigorous. She wasn't ill very long before she died, but she was writing a book then, a book on Miss Lathrop. She'd almost finished it, and I don't believe she was despondent or felt that there wasn't any use for anything of that kind. I think she was always hope. She always had faith in people. Always. And I think she brought it out in them, too. I mean, I think they responded to it. Because she felt, they felt that she wasn't just condemning them, but she understood that the first great strike here that they often talk about after she went to live at Hull House, the employees came to her for help, but the employers also. Just the same. Well, now, they wouldn't come and hear, if they came to her as they did, she wouldn't begin by condemning them for their labor practices and all that sort of thing. She'd try to make them see the point of view of the laborers, of their employees. And she did. That strike was settled, I think. And the man who was the president of that great corporation became one of the best friends Miss Adams ever had, he and his wife both, one of the strongest supporters of Hull House. And she didn't expect people to do things all at once either. I mean, she realized, as I often thought lately in reading some of her things, it seemed to her she related everything. No matter whether it was perhaps some little girl that had come into Hull House who was going to have an illegitimate child from some other cities, thinking she'd find a haven there at Hull House and you'd talk to Miss Adams about her. Whether it was something like that, or whether it was her coming back after going to Washington to see the President of the United States about some big international problem. But no matter how little or how great the thing was, in her mind, she related it to all the history of the past.
Perhaps you think
and
that...
And to the world of the present and to what she envisioned the future could be. It was all there in everything she... It seemed to me that way.
This inference that Jane Addams had what might be described as a sense of history...
Very much.
That
very
determined
much.
Determined everything she did in her daily life.
Very much. She, of course, her education at Rockford, which was a small school, a seminary at that time, although she got it changed into a college, but it was a very profound education, I think, with wonderful teachers. And strange, I was reading someplace the other day that she was greatly interested in science there at Rockford. But you can tell from writing and reading about her college days that they're very different from college days today for most people. And they left. She had a very small class, I think only 17 students, vowing to each other just eternal allegiance to all the ideals they had formed there. And they would never give them up without conscious justification, all that sort of thing. I mean, I think her education must have been marvelous there.
Miss Binford, you have been so kind and gracious. This is the second of two sessions. I'm thinking now of perhaps something else that may come to mind, if there is anything. You've spoken of Jane Addams' childhood, her children, mothers, old world, the girls of the streets, peace, suffrage, labor. Is her personal life, any other aspects, perhaps we're going to call this the dream of Jane Addams.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the, you've done it already, perhaps something that else, if there is anything else you want to say of her?
Well, I don't know. I think, I don't know. I think, of course, those last years of her life when she was working so much for peace, that Miss Addams had come to feel that that without peace in the world, in the whole world, you just couldn't ever reach the fulfillment of human welfare for everybody. I think all these other things that she was working for and that maybe seem not national anymore, of course they all are almost today, but that that until you had peace in the world and what that really would mean, that you just couldn't have human, reach the fulfillment of human welfare for all people in the world. I get the feeling that that's the way she felt. But if you did the things, if you had the understanding, if you, that would bring peace between men of all kinds and nationalities, that the other things would follow. And I think you can sort of feel that, don't you?
Jesse Binford.
Well, I don't know. You, I'm sure she felt that, I'm sure that was her ultimate hope and desire. And she thought it was possible. I don't think she ever gave up thinking it was possible.
In answering Mr. Mitchell's question, she, toward the end of her life, the world somewhat lopsided as she saw it, she never was resigned, really.
But never.
The hope, the affirmation
never.
Was there.
Never. You felt she would have gone on as long as she lived at any time. Still feeling just as she did at that time. And I think she had always felt that way. I don't think she lost her faith in anybody. The most greatest obstructionist, I don't think she lost faith that if you could only understand each other.
Understanding, then. Again,
it's her understanding to me that's the greatest quality of Miss Addams.
Jesse Binford.
You can hardly express it. There may be other things I'll think of, Mr. Turkle.
All
but,
right. I don't want you to. I don't want you to exhaust yourself. You're not. I mean.
Well, I don't get exhausted. It's hard for anybody. I think you read. They called me up this morning. Some man did from the Kiwanis magazine. And they're having quite a long article publishing their magazine about Miss Addams. And I said, who's writing it? And he said, I don't know. He said, some man who I guess is a writer. Well, I said, I'd be pretty careful if I were you, somebody who didn't know anything about Miss Addams or anything. And I said, because some things have been written that really shouldn't have been written. Of course, it's impossible for people almost to get to know her as the people who lived at that time knew her and have day by day. And because it's the little things as well as the big things, don't you think, that people do that reveal what they are?
You've just said something that possibly may be the last phrase of the program. What people do, the little things that reveal what they are.
Yeah.
She revealed herself. There was no facade here.
No.
She revealed
never.
Herself daily.
Yeah. See, there was nothing. I often think today we have our great structures of social work and all that, but Miss Addams wasn't an executive, you know. She didn't have any, somebody will ask, where was her office? She didn't have any office. There was no structure about all she did. It was, as today, everything's built up, and you have to go through such a long chain of command, as they say in the Navy, to really get to people, don't you know?
This was person to person.
Yeah, person to person.
Gee, thank you, Miss Benson.
I think Mr. Turtle's going to do something awfully interesting.
This can be very easy for me. You know how I'm going to do this? I'm making confession to you right now. It's going to be your reminiscences will be the 99% of the program. I'm going to do very little shifting around. It'll be as though you're recalling, and I will insert music or dramatic, music, song, and interview of Perry Miranda interviewing a boy. Mm-hmm. In between, really, I think it should be just the standpoint of Jesse Binford recalling.
Well, I don't know.
Recalling.
I thought you had
it will not be chronological. I don't
plan
to do it chronological. Just
your
mood as you recall it, basically. Did you have lunch?
Yes.
Did you? I'd be delighted if you would join Mr. Mitchell and me for
thank you. I'm sorry I can't, but I had lunch. I stopped. I had to go to the Board of Education building over here, and so I just stopped downstairs there a minute.
There's always the area of suggestiveness beyond and above what you can actually say through a single character. When I say this about looking at people, study the simplicities of human behavior, I've often felt that actors, and perhaps all artists under the influence and impact of modern psychology, attempt to be too complicated. I think human behavior is simpler than that. For me, two people, I'm always saying this to my students, the spectacle of two people really looking at each other, really conversing, really communicating, really connected by this activity, is one of the most beautiful that I can observe in life, and therefore in the theater. I want precisely that simplicity between people, that spirit of connection. I want actors to note how they behave when they're uncomplicated, when they're sitting as you and I are sitting now, not particularly bothered by the condition of the microphone here and all that, but simply connecting.
Talking through, and against each other. And against. This, then, you say, is almost one of the essences of acting, and simplicity.
Yes, it is.
Too often, young actors, they add.
They overcomplicate their problem, their psychological problem. They think they have to bring something extraordinary and unusual to the fact of being a human being. And this is disproved by the great writers.
I think what you've done, Morris Karnofsky, is disprove it very eloquently here. Because in another comment you make to Glennis Sice is the actor's interest in other of the arts themselves. So often,
yes.
I know it's a stereotype now, it's pretty well been destroyed. We think of the actor as a vain, strutting popinjay, but obviously this is a stereotype.
Well, the actor is a very hard-working person.
But more than that, I mean, in all the arts, really, and your interest is in... It shows in the work you're doing over and beyond the field of theater itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, the actor has to respect what he does, and this is partly what I mean when I say have respect for love. I think Shakespeare is an example of extraordinary love for the material, and therefore the spirit of Shakespeare conveys itself in those terms. I think the great failures of the world, I don't mean people, but I mean the great classic failures of the world have to do with the failure of love.
On this note, I think we have done it. We have had it. I look at the clock, but not that the clock will dominate us, but I think we've just about ended a cycle. Morris Karnofsky, your second time around, yet something new and fresh. And sad news for the audience, I mentioned the added performance of The Merchant of Venice the 17th, but it's completely sold out, so... Obviously, there's an obvious moral here that Morris Karnofsky must return next year in another Shakespearean role. Thank you very much, Mr. Karnofsky, for being our guest this morning.
Thank you.
And let's hear from Marty Robinson. We'll speak of some other programs during the week.